Several of these committees receive complaints against dates from individual victims. They issue decisions that are non-binding, but of a legally authoritative and persuasive nature. Three human rights courts exist at the regional level: the American Court of Human Rights, the European Court of Human Rights, and the African Court on Human and People's Rights. At both the UN and regional levels, treaty bodies have found an implied right to legal aid under their respective treaties as an integral aspect of fundamental rights to a fair trial and due process, freedom from discrimination and equality before the law, and an effective remedy for rights violations. The treaty bodies have also found that a right to legal aid to challenge detention flows from the right to liberty. The rights to a fair trial, to liberty and security of the person, equality before the law, and the right to a remedy for a rights violation are affirmed in all principal human rights treaties. The courts and treaty bodies have affirmed that the right of access to the courts is consistent with the rule of law and the avoidance of arbitrary power. However, they have stressed that the state has a free choice of the means to be used in guaranteeing litigants the right of access to a court. The institution of a legal aid system constitutes one of those means, but there are others, such as simplification of procedure. Discriminatory access to justice is also prohibited under the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, the Convention Relating to the Status of Refugees, and the Convention on the Rights of the Child, as well as in various regional instruments. Of relevance to Canada, too, of course, is the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which affirms the right of Indigenous peoples to the full enjoyment, without discrimination, of all human rights and fundamental freedoms recognized in the UN Charter, the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, and international human rights law. While this presentation does not allow time to go into specific cases from the UN and regional human rights jurisprudence on the right to legal aid, the major cases are discussed in the Guide to International Law Rights to Legal Aid. So what is the scope of the right to legal aid in international law? States are not required under international law to provide legal aid to every applicant. Both the UN and regional human rights systems have affirmed that the right to legal aid to facilitate access to courts for both criminal and civil matters is not absolute. The right of access may legitimately be subject to restrictions, such as imposing financial contributions or requiring a case to be well-founded and not vexatious or frivolous. Such conditions, however, must be compatible with the right of access provided in a specific treaty. For example, under both the ICCPR and the European Convention on Human Rights, to be entitled to state-funded legal aid, persons must demonstrate that they lack the financial means to pay for their own lawyer, and that the interests of justice demonstrate the need for legal assistance. Persons who are provided with legal aid are not necessarily entitled to choose which lawyer is appointed to them. UN principles encourage states to provide legal aid regardless of a person's means if the case is particularly urgent or complex or the potential penalty is severe. Under the UN principles, where the means test is calculated on the basis of family income, but individual members are in conflict with each other or do not have equal access to the family income, only the income of the person applying for legal aid is used for the purposes of the means test. Test criteria should not exclude persons whose means exceed the limits set by the means test, but who cannot afford or do not otherwise have access to a lawyer in situations where legal aid would otherwise have been granted. Children are always exempt from the means test. Once an individual meets the means test, assessment moves on to the merits test, that is, whether the interests of justice require that legal representation is needed. This involves a consideration of such matters as the seriousness of the charge, the potential penalty, the complexity of the procedure, and the capacity of the individual to represent themselves. Minimally, the interests of justice will require the provision of legal aid whenever a person's liberty is at stake. Similar preconditions are imposed on the right to legal aid in civil and administrative law proceedings. Persons must show that they lack the financial means to engage counsel and may also be required to demonstrate some likelihood of success. Also relevant will be the importance of what is at stake for the applicant. Under the European Convention on Human Rights, restrictions on legal aid for civil matters must pursue a legitimate aim and be proportionate. A primary indispensable requirement for the interests of justice in each case is that of fair procedure before the courts. Under international law, legal aid must be practical and effective in the way it is applied. This requires that legal aid must be effective and provide promptly at all stages of the justice process. prior to being questioned or at the time of detention. People must be promptly informed of the right to legal assistance and of the availability of legal aid. Effective legal aid includes, but is not limited to, unhindered access to legal aid providers, for detained persons, confidentiality of communications, access to case files, and adequate time and facilities to prepare the defense and to assess to access the full range of services inherent in legal advice. In appointing a legal aid lawyer, the state must be diligent, fair, and must avoid arbitrariness. States must not only prohibit discrimination with regard to access to courts and tribunals, but may also need to take positive measures to ensure meaningful access for women, children, and vulnerable groups. Legal aid providers must possess qualifications and training appropriate for the services they provide, according to established accreditation criteria, and be subject to appropriate oversight mechanisms. Legal aid providers must be able to carry out their work effectively, freely, and independently. And states must have in place effective remedies and safeguards that apply if access to legal aid is undermined, delayed, or denied, or if persons have not been adequately informed of their right to legal aid. UN principles provide that an independent legal aid authority should be established to provide, administer, coordinate, and monitor legal aid services, to ensure the quality of legal advice, counsel, and representation, and proper and adequate access to the court system. While the independence of the legal profession from the state means that the state cannot be held responsible for every shortcoming on the part of the lawyer appointed for legal aid purposes, if the lawyer fails to provide effective representation, and this is manifest or is brought to the attention of the state or court, then the state is under an obligation to intervene to remedy the situation. Turning now to Canada's duty to implement the right to legal aid, it is worth spending a little time talking about the framework for implementing international law in Canada. While Canada has ratified all of the UN treaties referred to in this presentation, not all of the provisions of these instruments have been brought into Canadian law. Once Canada ratifies a treaty, its provisions are legally binding as a matter of international law, and Canada is obliged to ensure implementation of treaty obligations at every level. The Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, to which Canada acceded on the 14th of October 1970, specifies that states' parties are bound by their treaty obligations, and all treaty obligations must be performed in good faith, the principle of pacta sunt servanda. Article 27 of the Vienna Convention reads, "A party may not invoke the provisions of its internal law as justification for its failure to perform a treaty." It has been Canada's practice to ratify treaties only after securing the support of provinces. As observed by Gib Van Aert, failure to give domestic effect to a binding treaty obligation that requires it is itself a breach of the treaty. As a member of the United Nations, the OAS, and the Commonwealth, Canada is also expected to respect UN and regional declarations, guidelines, statements of principle, resolutions and recommendations, and standards endorsed by the Commonwealth Secretariat. International law does not, however, become binding within Canada until certain steps are taken. International human rights law is received in Canada in the following ways: through the incorporation of customary international law by the common law. Rules of customary international law are norms that have become widely accepted by the international community as having acquired the status of law. Secondly, through the passage of legislation to incorporate treaties into domestic law. And thirdly, through the interpretive presumption that domestic law conforms with the state's international obligations. With respect to treaties ratified by Canada, the Supreme Court of Canada has confirmed that international treaties are not part of Canadian law unless they have been incorporated into Canadian law by statute. Despite these international obligations and Canada's policies for ensuring federal-provincial cooperation on ratification of treaties, Canada often fails to enact specific legislation to implement treaties. Canada lacks laws that require parliament or provincial and territorial legislatures to incorporate treaty provisions into federal or provincial laws or otherwise ensure implementation of international human rights obligations. Often the text of an implementing enactment does not refer to the treaty. For example, the charter does not refer to the ICCPR. The reception of international law is also governed by the interpretive presumption articulated by the Supreme Court of Canada that legislation is presumed to respect the values and principles enshrined in international law, and that interpretations that reflect these values and principles are preferred. The Supreme Court of Canada has also ruled that international human rights law is a critical influence on the interpretation of the scope of the rights included in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. But Canada's courts have not to date, however, provided clear guidance as to the nature and scope of the interpretive presumptions arising from unincorporated treaties or customary international law. And nor have courts always interpreted domestic law in conformity with the plain meaning of international human rights treaties binding on Canada. Over the past decade, UN treaty bodies have criticized Canada, and BC in particular, for failing to provide equal and effective access to courts and remedies for human rights violations because of inadequate legal aid or other mechanisms to ensure effective access to justice. I will highlight just two of the most recent criticisms. The 2013 Universal Periodic Review of Canada's human rights record by the Human Rights Council highlighted the need to ensure equal access to justice, particularly for Indigenous women and members of minority groups. A 2012 report commissioned by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Refugees found that recent changes to Canada's asylum procedures, together with cuts in legal aid funding across Canada, have resulted in an increase in unrepresented claims by persons seeking asylum in Canada. The report noted that not only does a lack of representation have a major impact on fairness of the refugee determination procedures, but also the overall acceptance rate for unrepresented claimants was found to be significantly lower than for represented claimants. So with that primer on the international law rights to legal aid and Canada's obligations under those laws, we can now look at the situation in BC.